Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go with another Brock and Salk podcast. Hello, sir.
Hello, Michael.
Hello, Brock.
You know what I'm
Missed
thinking
you last
right
week
now?
On the podcast.
You know what I'm thinking right now?
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking about when me and the family were driving on the Columbia River over there in Chelan, a little getaway like in June or July of our first year together. And we were picking blueberries, having a great time.
Wow.
And my buddy Mike Saul called me.
Really? Said, this is June of like 2009?
Yep.
So we've been doing the show together for like 2 months.
Yes.
Okay.
And you said, don't ever do this again. This is hell. Me and Paisley have to read the headlines on ESPN.com.
Yeah,
There's nothing to talk about. Nothing. Don't you ever leave me like this again. I can't. Do you understand me? We were reading the headlines on ESPN.com.
That's true. That actually happened. But it was July because it was the All-Star break.
There you go.
It was early July. It was All-Star break. Colin and I are just like, I'm out. I got nothing. It's the only time in my career of doing radio that I've been like, I got nothing to say. I don't know what to say. I don't have anything else to talk about. I have no idea where this conversation should go next. And I'm just Paisley. And Paisley's great. I love Colin. But we're just the two of us just like,
So for Venus and Serena in the open, what do you think?
That's basically what it was, man. Yes. That's not the way things are right now, man.
No, compare and contrast now. And where do you want to start?
You can make a legitimate case for all of it. I kind of want to start Mariners. I'm not going to lie,
go
man.
Ahead.
I'm just I know the Seahawks thing is juicy, but I'm I know by the time you listen to this, they're probably in a stupid lockout. I'm just so mad about the whole lockout thing. I found myself like talking with my heart instead of my head last night. I was getting into it on Twitter with Maury Brown, and who's a really smart, nice guy, writes for Forbes. Do you know who Maury is?
No.
He's gonna come on my show tomorrow.
Like,
he's
a baseball guy.
Yeah, he's just a really smart business baseball type of guy. And I was making the argument that this lockout was stupid, and basically he just like completely tore me like apart on Twitter. And I was like, yeah, I'm mostly just mad because I'm a Mariners fan, and like, I can't believe they're gonna do this to me. Like, I'm so excited about where this season is going. And talked to Robbie Ray today. He was awesome, really fun to talk to. I love what Jerry's done so far, and I think they still have the opportunity to do a lot more. And then this whole thing's gonna get ripped away for the next few months. And yeah, I understand that everyone feels like they won't actually miss time because they'll get back together in February. But if that's the case, then why can't they do continuing resolutions like they do in Congress and just like let this thing live over the course of the off season? It just drives me nuts.
Yeah. What do you mean by they expect to be back by February?
Nobody expects this thing to lock out and miss games.
Right.
So, it would be a surprise if they miss spring training
games. Right. So the idea is you've got a deadline of basically February 1st to make everything work so that you can have, 2 weeks to get ready for spring training.
And the feeling is that everybody is going to go quiet for the next 2 months?
Who the heck knows? It's just so stupid. Like, if that's the deadline, make this the deadline and actually get it done now instead of this worthless lockout. Like, it's so frustrating to me. They do have big issues to work out. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that part's easy, but I don't see why they need to lock out in order to make it happen. Like, that should be a last resort, not like, we'll lock out for a few months and then we'll come back and everything will be fine. Like, man, yeah. Maybe it will be, but you're also not the NFL. People aren't addicted to you the way they are to the NFL, and careful thinking that, we'll just come back and it'll be no problem the way the NFL did. I don't know if that's 100% true for baseball, but if they can find a way to fix some of what ails them with the game, with the strikeouts and walks and the action and some of the issues with the financial system for when players get paid, et cetera, that'll be worth it. But that's not what you guys want to hear about. You guys want to talk about the Mariners, right? You want to talk about what they've done so far. Shame on all of us. I don't know one person, not one, who mentioned Robbie Ray's name as a Mariner acquisition. I don't know one person who guessed on it, who thought about it. I heard Divish say he was surprised by it. I was surprised by it. Howdy's nodding his head. He was surprised by it.
No, Howdy's nodding because
I wasn't that surprised. By
he and Shannon hit on it on the dark web.
If you listen to my podcast, you'd known.
If you go to the dark web in his own individual podcast, so he does one with Shannon,
right,
for the world to see, and then he
does
dark
his Gizmag
web.
One that's a little bit more Howdy specific.
Yes.
And you will see there he called this actually almost the exact terms. He had the opt out after
he had
5 years
110. It turned out to be 5 years 115.
That's right.
Yeah. Tough. Seriously, why did we all miss this? It's such a good deal. I love Robbie Ray. I love what they got. He's the all time leader in the history of baseball. He's the all time leader, Brock, in strikeouts per nine innings. By the way, I had such a fun time explaining that to my dad last night. I don't mean to sell my dad down the river here, and I love my dad, and he's a smart baseball guy, a smart guy in general. Trying to explain to my dad, like, well, he's the all-time leaders in strikeouts per nine. He's like, well, what does that mean? I'm like, well, you know, strikeouts per nine innings. He's like, well, what if he only pitches six? Well, then they would do division. Well, okay, so like every nine innings it rolls over? Like, no, he just pitches and then you divide. He said, well, how do they figure it out? Do they have to like count? Like, yeah, they just use math. What? He's like, oh, okay, I get it. But I don't think he does. I still don't think my dad understands.
How do you sync things to the cloud? Is there which cloud do I pick? Do I have to wait until the cloud's in the sky?
I've been getting grief for the whole Dr. Rick progressive, you're turning into your parents thing on the show. Justin Amore have been killing me for getting old. But like when you hear that, you're just like, oh, man, like, dad, just do math.
Can I just share a super quick confession, not to derail us, but I got to confess something. Like, I'm, as you know, middle child instigator in some ways. I find myself carrying cash, which, you know, is I know you think it's really weird, but I purposely do it now. And especially for high school kids at retail spots to see them try to do math. I could put the card in, and many times, like, I could put the card in and make this easy, but I want to see, can this person figure out, and then I'll really screw them, right? It'll be like $10.13, and I'll give them 21, and it just blows their mind. Like, they just don't even know what to do. Like, math is lost. The plastic world has changed for the young people. Yeah. And then, I think the sabermetrics and the analytics and everything else for the older.
Well, I'm going to ask my dad to calculate war later. Like, Dad, can you just look at the WRC Plus, see if you can figure out what that's going to be for this guy this year?
So why? So I asked you, I think on Monday, why you didn't think about the name Robbie Ray or whenever it came down.
Yeah.
Howdy, of all of the names and all of the hours and all of the time that you have spent, and I believe on this podcast 2-3 weeks ago, you said, do not spend on a veteran starting pitching. You're going to get that at the trade deadline, right? So do you love this move as much as Salk loves this
move? Yeah, I love it because I expected, I think like many people, for Robbie Ray to cash in like many recent winners do. When you have a huge, enormous MVP caliber season or Cy Young caliber season, usually there's a team out there that says, I'm willing to pay you a full salary just for that season, projecting that to be the case. And that's not what this deal is. This isn't Max Scherzer's deal, who is, I've signed you as a Cy Young guy, and I'm going to expect you to be a Cy Young pitcher for the next 3 years of this contract. This Robbie Ray deal is, I expect you, this money is number two starter money. Like, this is not ace starter money for 5 years, and really it's three, because if he pitches well, he's out. But, I mean, it's nobody expected the terms to be that short in the years, and nobody expected the dollar number to be that low.
It's a coup, man. Howdy nailed it.
Why then the deal? Is it
I don't know.
Because it was a one and done? Because he hasn't done this consistently? Is there injury concern or history?
Is the market that soft for that?
Because people thinking what we were thinking 3 weeks ago, that you get, you know, starting pitching at the deadline, and you know, that trend has kind of continued to so soften the market for a player of his caliber?
I don't know the answer to those questions, Brock. They're all very fair, good questions. I mean, this is a good... It's not a bad deal for Robbie Ray either. No. It's not like he got nothing. I mean, he's getting, what, $23 million a year over the course of 5 years.
And
I mean,
if he gets out in 3 years, he's 33 years old? Scherzer gets $43 million at 37. What does Robbie Ray get if he continues to pitch like a Cy Young for 3 years?
So there's some upside for him in it. So I don't know the answer to it, but I think that's part of it. I also just didn't think Jerry would go after a veteran starter in free agency. I saw Jerry looking to trade for someone younger in the pitching world and then using the money to go after bats. I don't know if they tried to throw some money at some bats. It didn't work at the beginning of free agency, right? There's probably some frustration. And so, hey, this is what's open and available to us. This is the best pitcher we have on our list. Let's get him. And if we can do it at reasonable money, which they did, this does not affect their ability to do anything else they want to do. Whether it's Chris Bryant or Trevor Story or even Chris Taylor or any of it, like, this doesn't affect their ability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Go out and do whatever they want. And by the way, if I'm them, yes, I would sign either Trevor Story or Chris Bryant for sure. And the next thing I do, I'd sign Michael Conforto. And you know what I'd do after that? I'd sign another pitcher. I don't know if it's Stroman or if it's even a back-end guy like Tyler Anderson. You know what I'd really like to do? Both of those things. You can't have enough pitching.
Mm.
There's no downside to that. Like, pitchers don't block other pitchers. If you're good enough, then you can always trade somebody. I mean, like, it's not like hitters. Hitters can, you know, position players can get blocked. Pitchers don't get blocked. If you've got a pitcher who's ready, you pitch him, man, and you let him go, or you start him in the bullpen, or you say, look, if you've got a pitcher, you'll find room for him. Trust me. So I would have no issues with them signing one, if not two more pitchers. Give me Stroman and Anderson. Let's go. Let's rock. I'll take that. In addition to your double A guys that you like with Brash and Williamson and George Kirby, you should be ready this year. Maybe Hancock will be ready this year. Why not? Like, let's go. I think that you're bound to have some injury. You may have some regression, right? You loved what you got from Flexen last year. Are you banking on Chris Flexen doing that again? I'm not. I liked it. I'd love for him to. Maybe he'll even be better. But I'm not banking on it. Right? Marco had his ups and downs last year. Yeah, give me as much pitching as you can get, because we all see when health goes south for pitchers, you're not the same team.
But you like these first two foundational blocks, the trade for Frazier and then adding just the Cy Young Award winner. I mean, it's pretty amazing. You just say it out loud.
Right.
Frazier was the only all-star for the Pirates. Got to see him in person last year before he gets moved. And then you sign the Cy Young Award winner. So, like, you say those things out loud. That sounds awesome. And then you remember, oh, that's right. In our division, that other team signed Gray, Seager, Semien. Right? I mean, right there in your own division. And that was not the Astros. That was the Texas Rangers.
Yeah. I'm not that, you know, we'll see about the Rangers and whether or not that threat is real. You know, if this is all the Mariners are going to do this offseason, it's not enough. But
oh,
I don't think
close.
But nobody thinks that's the case. Why do I like these deals? There's not one thing about them not to like. Honestly, that's kind of the simple answer to it. Are they perfect? No. Are there some concerns? Yeah, could Robbie Ray regress? Yeah, he probably will. Robbie Ray probably won't have a sub-3 ERA this upcoming year. That would be surprising. But he's also unlikely to have a 7 ERA. Like, I mean, like, there's almost nothing not to like about these deals, because they got good players at reasonable prices, whether it's the assets given up for Frazier or the money given up for Ray, and none of it precludes them from doing all the other stuff they have to do. Would I have liked for them to get Semien? Yes. They only wanted to give him 5 years. Okay, I'd have given him 7. Who cares? It's an extra $60 million. Not my problem. Like, honestly.
Yeah.
You just saved a ton of money over the last few years, and the money that you saved by trading Cano and some of the other things you did, and then also just having and playing young players. Great. Take the $60 million you spent over the last 2 or 3 years and spend it on the wasted money at the end of Semien's career. What do I care? Do it. Like, get him for the next few years, because that's a dude who can legitimately, you know, be in the middle of your order every day and provide all that pop. I would have done that. They didn't. That's fine. Do it with Story.
Well, it's fine, but you better then get the next alternative.
That's right.
I mean, that's fine today, as you and I are taping this on the morning of December 1st before the lockdown is going to hit tonight. That's fine, and who knows, by the time this airs, there may be another move. That's fine, but you have to, not want to, you have to find then the alternative, be it Chris Bryant, be it Trevor Story, be it a trade for, is it Jose Martinez, is that his name?
Jose Ramirez.
Ramirez, darn it. Almost went 3 for 3.
Mm.
You've now, okay, by that walking out the door, you now have to get another deal done. You have to get a prominent bat.
The Mariners are surreptitious, right? They operate in secret a lot better than most other teams do, especially these days.
Kind of.
All right.
Jerry talks. I mean,
he does. They
balance
he doesn't,
those. Balance like, those worlds really well. Like
yes,
he is not afraid to talk.
But
to
they don't
anybody.
Leak. This isn't the Mets, right?
Yes.
I mean, like they don't leak left and right. This is not me talking about any. I have no information here. As I said, nobody does. No one saw Robbie Ray coming. Okay.
Nope.
I'm going to paint you a complete scenario that I don't think is going to happen. But like, if it does, like. What if the Mariners looked at it and said, okay, 7 years for Semien, yeah, it's too much for Semien, but that's where the market is. If we're going to do 7 years, we might as well do it for Carlos Correa. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, hey, yeah. If we're going to do seven for Semien, if that's where the market is, maybe
right.
We'll do eight for Correa. Let's go. I mean, like, I don't think that they're going to get Carlos Correa. I've never felt like that is the fit.
Mm-hmm.
But for all of the conversation of Bryant and Story, Bryant's got risk. I know Howdy loves him. Chris Bryant had one great year in 2017, his second year, his age 26 season. He had like a 7.5 war or something. He has never been the same player since then. There have been injuries. He's been a good player, but he has not been the same player since 2017, his second year in the league. Trevor Story is a really good player, and he puts up numbers, but it's been in Colorado, and he's had an elbow issue, and there are questions and concerns there. Would I like either of those two guys? Yes. Chris Taylor's a good player, but he's not in the same caliber as those others in terms of carrying a team with his power and all of that. And Corey Seager, rather, was never an option. So maybe you're the Mariners, and you say, all right, hey, I get it. Semien was our top choice, and we thought we'd get him for 5 years, this and that. It didn't work out. But as long as we're at it, as long as that's where the market is, maybe they do see themselves as in the running for Carlos Correa.
Hmm.
He's a lot more of a sure bet than any of those other guys.
Yep.
And oh, by the way, I know they said it's J.P. Crawford's job. He's the one who actually won the Gold Glove over Crawford this year. Maybe there is a conversation there. Maybe they do find a way for that to work for those two guys.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that's going to happen. It's probably unlikely. But just the way the Mariners kind of surprise you, sneak around, then the next thing you know, they're coming back with Robbie Ray in tow.
Yep.
Like, maybe they are big game hunting.
Yep.
Absolutely possible. I think it's even more likely that they've identified a team that's not ready to extend their young star.
Mm-hmm.
Think of somebody like Rafael Devers with Boston, that caliber of player, and says, all right, they're going to be a free agent in 2 years. Here's the number that the Red Sox don't want to meet. We'll trade you the prospects because we know what the extension price is for that guy.
Could be.
He's a cornerstone. He's ready to go. You have control. I could see them absolutely pulling off.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry is creative, if nothing else. And oftentimes he's thinking about players and ways of doing business that we're not thinking about. We try to think of the obvious stuff. Sign this guy. Sign that guy. Well, you didn't get Semien, so sign Story. That's not the way to run a baseball team. I'll be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. I mean, I would be excited, certainly, if they sign either of those guys. As long as that's who they want. You can't run a baseball team by saying, well, we didn't get the guy we wanted, so we'll take the next best thing and pay the same amount for him. You can't do that. That's no way to run a baseball team. If they don't think either of those two guys are great, they shouldn't sign them. They should absolutely bide their time, figure out another option. Maybe it is trading for Chapman. Maybe it's trying for a Devers type. Maybe it's looking into one of these 40-man situations with the Rays or somebody. Or maybe it's a team that doesn't want to extend their star.
Maybe it's Juan Soto in Washington, and they've got something that they just can't figure out there.
Maybe they are the team that wants to trade for Jose Ramirez, who's been out there as a possibility from Cleveland. Like there's a lot. I mean, you don't need to just... I think it's easy as a fan to kind of get into a box, and in the media too. I'm not putting myself above it. Well, here are the guys that are available. Get one. Well, if you don't get number one on your list, get number two. Because for us, it's just a rank list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. For them, it may be 1, 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
4. Like, they may have huge gaps between all of the talent levels of what they think those guys are worth. And they might be right.
I know, by the way, we've got a deadline. And does deadline spur action?
Absolutely.
It's supposed to. Apparently, it's the only thing that's going to spur any action in this stupid lockout.
There's been a lot of little things that have gone on. The MLB calendar is really loaded with little tiny dates all over the place. And yesterday, they kind of finished the last one, the tender contract deadline.
Mm.
Now, I'm really curious to see if we get what we normally get in July, which is that flurry of trades and moves in the last
right
4 hours right before the deadline.
Yeah.
Because all these rosters are set. You know basically what your controllable players look like. And it's time to make decisions. There's a deadline coming up. I would be I would not at all be surprised to see a flurry of trades happen
in baseball. And you know, it'd be more fun if even after that flurry, they found a way to extend so that they don't need to like get everything done in the next few hours. Anyway, Brock, you know I love New Year's Eve. Thanksgiving and New Year's always been two of my favorites. Thanksgiving, New Year's, and 4th of July. Three of my favorite, maybe my three favorite holidays. How about New Year's Eve this year on the 31st floor? With a little glitz and a little glamour, once in a lifetime. You like black tie event? Are you into that? I like stuff like that.
You kind of do. The cummerbund, the bow tie, all of it.
I like the whole like people getting dressed up thing. It's hard. Like black tie in Seattle means like you put on shoes instead of flip-flops or something. Like I'm always shocked where it's like, oh, it says black tie, but I'm
in
Seattle.
You do like the formal. Yeah,
I think if you're going to have black tie, go black tie.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, all-inclusive, progressive dining affair, front row seats to the 2022 Ascend Hospitality Group and Amazon Bellevue Fireworks Show. How great does that sound? All right, so here you go.
All right.
To celebrate 2022 and ringing in the new year, we got all kinds of spectacular moments, keepsakes, marvelous experiences featuring live band karaoke. Live band? Have you ever done live band karaoke? We did karaoke together back in the day, but that was like, you know, with a DJ. Live band karaoke. And there'll be a live DJ there by Audio Mo. Marquee photo moment sponsored by the Seattle Times, burlesque and aerial dancers, premium beverage sponsors, Moet and Chandon and Don Julio 1942, plus the best view of the 2022 fireworks show brought to you by Ascend and by Amazon Bellevue. So pop the bubbly, bring the bow tie to the Pacific Northwest, most breathtaking and extraordinary fine dining experience. Ring in the new year with Ascend. View the full details, book your tickets at ascendprime.com. Brock, I was back at Bend. I was thinking, we stayed at the same place we stayed at when we were
there.
You see
the old timers, the neighbors?
Well, no, and I wanted to give you a little update on that because I went looking for them. I know what car they drove.
Nice.
And I told you that
a Porsche.
Yeah, for those of you who don't remember the story, like these old guys, this old couple yelled at my kids and stuff for like playing in the common area. Mm. And at the time, I was a little worried because I didn't know who was allowed to do what. And they were like, well, you rent here, we own here. And they were like, they were real jerks to my kids about it. And I was like, hey, don't talk to my kids like that. You got a problem, talk to me. And they're just awful. So I then like checked in with the woman who owns the place, and she's like, "Oh no, you can be there. You ever have a problem again, you call me. We're going to go after these people." I was like, "Oh, all right, nice." So I felt pretty like on solid ground. So when we went back, we were like ready to go. We brought the frisbee. We were going to start like accidentally throwing it at their door.
Yep.
Like we were ready to go over Thanksgiving.
That's assault.
Like,
yeah, I know.
Yeah, let's rumble. And unfortunately, they weren't there. I don't know if they were intimidated knowing that we might be there or what. But yeah,
good times.
I mean, maybe
times.
They've passed on. Who knows? I mean, they were.
Did you have a great time?
Oh, wow. Huh?
Do you guys have a great time?
Of course, we had a great time.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Awesome.
It was great to just hang with the kids. What'd you do? Oh, you were working. You got to stop working on Thanksgiving. You got to stop doing this college football thing. It's not good for you.
Yeah. Double duty, by the way. Back-to-back days. Not as hard on me as it is on the crew, if you can imagine. All those poor guys having
going to be a good Christmas in the Hewitt household working two holidays.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I was thinking that the last time I watched the Seahawks in Bend was the Buffalo game last year. That's the game you called, right, Brock? Or did you call the Rams game?
No, I called the Buffalo
game. That's what I thought. All right, you called the Buffalo game. That's sort of like the watershed moment right now for the Seahawks. Nothing has been good since that day. I don't know if it's because you called their game.
Pretty much.
But it's amazing, especially for Russ. It's like, yeah, the finger thing is obviously a new level, and since he's come back, he's just not the same guy. But you can really point at that one game as like the line of demarcation of Russ before then in his career and Russ after that.
Correct, because it was full guns a-blazing. He was the league MVP at that time. He was shattering records, touchdown passes, and just started as hot as any QB in NFL history in that month of September. And then he pushed into that month, and of course it was all Russ's fault. Like, it was just the interceptions. It wasn't that Josh Allen was like 31 of 32 in the first half.
That will never
going happen. Up and down the field and scoring at will. And as I think even said on the air, this looks like it's 7-on-7. Like, they cannot do anything defensively, but it was all Russell's fault. And from that point forward, we got to stop with the turnovers. We got to stop taking risk. We got to play to our defense, play to win, run the ball, get conservative. And I mean, that was a huge, huge turning point. Is you now a year later, just about a year later, almost to the date, you look in the rearview mirror and you go, my goodness gracious, is this turn? Out goes Schottenheimer, who Greasy did point out in the broadcast Monday night. The most points ever scored in Seahawks franchise history in a single season was last year. even turning off the gas and stopping cooking and everything else. And yeah, from that point, man, it's been very, very different. And now we've hit a bottom that I don't think anybody expected, right? We said earlier about Robbie Ray, nobody had that. I thought the Seahawks after the preseason would still be a 9-10 win team. I didn't think they would get anywhere near where they did a year ago in the division.
You thought that based on the preseason they had?
Just looking at their roster.
Nobody played in the preseason. The roster, it's not like you would have felt any different before the preseason or after it.
Well, the guys that did play, yeah. Our players 23 through 50, whatever, and with some injuries and everything else, it shows that, yeah, you're not good enough. And, you know, you're probably not even going to get to, what are we at, 3-8? Gets a little bit more favorable down the stretch. Houston, some bad teams. You're not getting the 9 wins. I don't think you're getting 8 wins. Are you going to get to 6 wins? I think that's a viable question.
I think you have to, or else that pick to the Jets just looks worse and worse and worse. I mean, like, as of today, it's what, the number 4 pick?
Yes.
The number 4 pick? That, I mean, that could be Thibodeau. I mean, that could be, like, one of the best players in college football.
Yes. Yeah,
oh, God, that's hurt. That really is, like, stomach-turning.
Yeah.
Franchise left tackle.
Franchise left tackle, franchise pass rusher, just elite, somewhere you've not drafted since, you know, Russell Okung and Earl Thomas. And we know
what
the difference.
What a miss, by the way. Yeah. I mean, what a miss to think that your defense was so close that you could add one player to it and be elite.
Yep.
What an enormous miss in your self-evaluation.
Yes.
That is way above and beyond a ridiculous miss in knowing who you are. Whoa.
And I know that there's a ton of conversation. I was just before we came on watching the NFL folks and Mina Kimes, who's as dialed in on the Seahawks as anybody there with Orlovsky and Spears and Laura and crew. And she's just like, I mean, look at your misses. Mm-hmm. Look at your misses on this roster the last 5, 6, 7 years. And I know now, right, back in the day, it was like, ooh, what tent are you in? Are you in Matt Flynn's tent? Are you in T-Jack's tent? Are you in this little Russell Wilson's tent? Whose tent are you in? Well, now you've got 3 pretty distinct tents.
Yeah, I'm done with the tents. I'm not buying into it. I think it is a false narrative.
Okay.
I'm serious. I know where you're going with this whole, like, hey, do you blame Pete? Do you blame Russ? Do you blame John? I'm done with that. Honestly. Like, it's not serving anybody to try to figure out who to blame.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is not any one of them. All 3 of them know how to do their job. I honestly believe that. Does anyone think Russell Wilson can't be a quarterback in the NFL anymore? Like, he forgot after the Buffalo game and now he's not good anymore? That doesn't make any sense.
Nope.
Yes, he's got to come back health-wise from the finger and all that. But, like, the accuracy will return. Russell's, like, decision-making, he's a great quarterback and will be again.
Yep.
Does anybody think Pete Carroll? I mean, I know there's some people out there that don't think Pete Carroll can coach, but they're wrong. Pete Carroll is arguably the best leader in the NFL and certainly in anybody's top 5 of culture setters, tone setters, and leaders in the NFL as head coaches. Pete sets an agenda and a culture and a philosophy in a building and is as good at that as anybody in the NFL today. Maybe Belichick's in his own category because mm-hmm. like he's just a unique human. But okay, Pete's right there. Does anybody think John Schneider, like,
but hold on 1 second. What? I mean, that Pete one, that's fine, like, is a leader.
Well, I'm not
but
done,
that's not the job.
I understand
job.
That, but that's okay. A big part of the job. I would argue it might be, like, the biggest part of the job and what Pete brings to the table. I know there's more, and I'm not ignoring that. I'm just going to come back to it.
Okay.
The third part is John. Does anybody think John just doesn't know how to evaluate talent? I don't think that. I don't know what their process is. I don't know, you know, who decides what and how that's gone down. Yes, they've missed on a lot of players. There's no doubt. I don't think John, like, knew how to evaluate talent and now doesn't know how to evaluate talent. What I do think is that there's a lot of, A, guys trying to do jobs other than their own. John worried about what Pete's doing. Pete worrying about what John's doing. Russell worrying about, like, who the offensive coordinator is and who they're bringing in. Do your job.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody concentrates on their job and no one else's job, I think that would serve the Seahawks very well. And if I were Jody Allen and I were to sit down with everybody at the end of the year, before I blow this thing up that has been an unbelievable success for over a decade here with these 3 guys, there's no way I'm not having that conversation with them first to try to see if we can maintain something that has been successful, even if it's not in a successful spot right now. I would look at it and say, I don't need to be in anybody's camp. You do your job, you do your job, and you do yours. Don't try to do mine. Don't try to do his. Don't try to do hers. You do your job. Bill Belichick says it best. Do your job, not someone else's. And Brock, I wasn't here for the end of the Holmgren era, but my understanding was that a lot of it was sort of ended because of an inability of everybody to just stick to their own job Correct. Instead of being mad about what somebody else was doing on the other side of the building. Correct. Do your job. And I don't know that anybody's mad necessarily, although certainly there's some indication that could be the case. But Russ, stop worrying about whether or not you're a hero. Stop worrying about whether or not you're the offensive coordinator. Stop worrying about whether or not you're the head coach or the GM or choosing the groceries or anything else. You're the quarterback. Figure out how to play that well, and then we can talk about the other stuff. But how about you throw directly to an open receiver before you worry about who your coordinator is or who your coach is or who the left tackle is? Yeah. Pete, do your job. Lead this organization through this. Lead Russ. Help him get his way through this. Make the changes necessary to get the right scheme in place on both offense and defense. And it can be your scheme. Stop catering to Russ. Stop catering to anybody else and their comments about you. Be Pete Carroll. If you want to have a run the ball and play action and a great defense, then do that. Then turn to John Schneider and say, I insist on these kinds of players. Go get them. And then get out of the way. That, to me, is how the Seahawks end up becoming successful again. Let three smart people who are good at their jobs do their jobs and nothing else.
I mean, I think all of that sounds really good. My notepad is busy writing over here because as you were kind of walking through all of that, not to nitpick or poke holes in it or tear those things
down. No,
you
should do that. That's what you're here for.
No, but because in premise, I think that's absolutely right. The challenge is, and I think of a few people, I think actually of a conversation we had with Brian Kelly, the now, no, not.
He seems like a good dude. People like him, huh?
Yeah.
No, yeah. No, maybe not.
Yeah, he's strong-minded, and he has a huge belief. They were 4-8 at Notre Dame. They were 4-8, and he had to look in the mirror. That was in 2016. Since then, I think they're 54-8. And I just said, what in the world flipped? Like, how did that turn? What was it? And he said, there's two things. Number one, you have to have curiosity. If I would have sat in my seat and continued in my seat thinking, you know what? Look at my resume. I'm a smart guy. I'm a talented guy. I haven't forgotten how to coach. Look at all these things that I've done. Everything that you just said. Then you know what? The next year we would have probably been 4-8 or 5-7. I had to have a curiosity of what's truly broken here because it's broken. And how do we go about fixing it? And he believes, kind of like sports radio hosts in entertainment, that if you don't have curiosity, you can't do the job. And I would, you know, when it comes to Pete in particular, does he still have that curiosity to evolve? Does he still have that curiosity from a scheme standpoint to do everything? I think there's legitimate questions there, just based on Ken Norton being in the spot that he's been in and watching. They have. Right. They've moved it around. They've become a two shell team from a single high team. And there's certainly a case to be made. But if I'm Jody Allen and I'm kind of searching through this, I have to that one just kind of man.
Not to me, man. I don't see that as an issue at all. I would disagree with you on it. And I respect the opinion. I don't think that's a problem for Pete.
OK,
I know Pete is 70. He didn't act that way. I see Pete as being as inquisitive, curious, and interested as he's ever been.
Okay, so that's one. Number two, I think of Kirby Smart, who's got the number one team in America, who's going to probably handle Alabama this weekend, and I think decisively, and going to be the number one seed, and likely win a national championship down in Georgia. And he said it very, very clearly.
Okay.
50% of his job is recruiting. 50% of it doesn't matter my X's and O's. It doesn't matter any of these, my motivation. If I don't have the players, we don't win, period, end of story. At least 50% is recruiting, 25% is the development of those players, and then about 25% is scheme and game planning, X's and O's, and having, you know, the right plan and putting those pieces in place. But if you don't have it, and Mike, right now, over the second half of the season and into next season and losing that first round pick and everything, do you have the players? Do you have the players? I think it was our buddy that you mentioned his name last week on the podcast, and he tweeted again, said, hey man, if Pete and John inherited this thing tomorrow, like they did in 2010, they would tear it down. This roster isn't good enough. They would do the same thing they did in 2010 mm-hmm. with 400 transactions, because right now this roster is not
good enough. So I agree
with
you, Brock, but that's sort of what we're saying here. It's not just the scheme. It's not just the roster. It's not just the quarterback. All of those things are problematic right now. but I think that they're all problematic with three people at the helms of them that are not necessarily.
So you think they got in this roster? You think they got in this roster mess because Pete and I, was there. I was right in the middle of it with Holmgren at the end of it and Tim Ruskell, and it was obvious. I mean, it was bad. It was ugly. It was really, really ugly. And do you think they got into this predicament with this roster right now? Because they've been in charge of it. They've been the ones running it. They made the decisions. They pulled the triggers on the trades.
And they've made a lot of mistakes. There's no doubt about it.
And you think it's because they have spent too much time doing one another's job?
Well, and just catering to each other and worrying about each other. We got to get this for Russ and we need this for that. Rather than just going back to the principles that they started with at the beginning. And I think that they could still very well be the right people to work under those principles. I don't think there's a lot of sense in the pointing fingers at one place or another, because I honestly think all three things are to blame. I think that the schematics are problematic. Yep. I think that the roster is problematic. Yep. And I think that the quarterback play has been bad. I mean, let's just look at the last game. Let's just look at the Washington game, which was one of the worst games we've seen watching the Seahawks in our time together, Brock. It was, I was saying it yesterday, it wasn't like one of the Rams games where they just get suffocated by a defense, right? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like one of those games where they just shoot themselves in the foot with dumb errors and like mistakes and turnovers. They just didn't even seem like they had a clue of what to do offensively. It was really challenging to see. So, okay, if you want to start pointing fingers, okay, well, let's see. Was the talent level great in that game? Were they so much better than Washington that they could just, you know, walk out and beat them?
No,
of course not. But on the other side of that, were they as talented as Washington? Yes. They weren't going up against the best team in the league. Washington's not that good. Nope. They had enough talent to beat Washington in that game. There's no doubt in my mind. There really is. They're not a great team talent-wise, but they had enough talent to beat Washington. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can point to talent, and I can also say it was good enough. So let's go to coaching. Did they come up with a great scheme in that game? No, they did not, obviously. Their offense was abysmal. On the other hand, did they find a couple of drives where they put it together, and when the offensive line did its work and they were able to get a couple solid running plays in a row and it led to play action, it led to a long passing play? Yeah, you can see how when the talent does its job, that the scheme can be good enough, and it's not that different from the scheme being run elsewhere. But also, you know, at the same time, what did they do on a 2-point conversion? They ran a play out of the 80s. Like, what was that?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so there's not all the creativity. So I can point to the scheme, and then I can say the scheme is fine. I can point at the quarterback and say if he just does his job and hits a couple of wide-open receivers like he normally does, maybe we're not even having this conversation. And they get the running game going, and they complete a couple first downs, and they're up in the lead. And, Brock, you can write this so many different ways.
Sure.
So I'm sick of blaming one spot or the other. They've all screwed up, but they're all talented. So how do you find a way to not throw the baby out with the bathwater, but actually get the most out of three talented people?
Yep. And then who do you empower and entrust? And can those three all do this? Can they really all do this, Mike?
Well, what do you think? Do you think the three of them can find a way to work
together? I
think
most of the consensus from the folks on the outside is no.
But what do you think is going on in the inside? I mean, the consensus from the outside, who cares? What's going on inside?
Well, the consensus from the outside is what, you know, both from Pete's perspective that he's putting to people he trusts on the outside, from the quarterback's position that he's putting and giving to people on the outside that he empowers and trusts. So you're hearing some of the outside comes from the inside and what they want to deliver and the messaging they want to deliver. I don't think in this world, John Schneider's necessarily delivering any message other than just trying to get this thing right. But I do think Pete is going to have his people and his folks, and you're going to hear his messaging, and certainly Russell will too. Are those two coexisting? I've never heard Pete talk about Russell the way he did with you on Monday, nor on Sunday night. Like, I just never heard that.
But Russell also has never missed wide open receivers like that, Brock. I mean, he didn't have a choice. What is he supposed to do, blow smoke? Russell has wide open guys, and he can't hit them right now because he's not right. I don't know if it's mental or if it's the finger or if there's something else going on, but I don't think Pete has a choice. I thought he was as nice as he could be regarding Russ.
Tape don't lie. Guys are wide open. Yeah, three or four times they were. He also threw some incredible throws. His touchdown pass is as good a throw as you're going to see.
And he said that.
Led him on a 96-yard drive. And
he talked about that. He said, look, it is hard. I don't think it's the finger. But, you know, obviously there's some wide open guys and the ball's not coming out like it should. But then there are other plays where when he needs to drive it, he can. I think that's confusing for Pete. Who is my quarterback right now?
Yep.
Is he the guy that I've watched and played with for a decade or not? I think Pete's trying everything he can to get him through it. And if there's got to be a level of accountability there so he doesn't lose the rest of the team, which all played hard, I don't blame him for that.
The rest of the team that ran 10 times for 18 yards that looked like the worst run.
I meant the defense.
Like the worst run team I've ever. Like, that is the worst Seahawk rush, to your point. Like, that wasn't, hey, there's a 4-yard, you just can't block Aaron Donald. That was a. Every time you handed the ball off, I wrote a little note like dead play.
Yep.
Dead play. Dead on arrival.
Yeah, you get that whole thing where it looks like you've called the wrong play in Tech Bowl.
Yes,
like, oh, geez. The other side called the same play.
They called the same play.
They snowed me under.
Second 11. We'll line up again. Second
Nothing
and nine.
You can do.
Second, yeah.
Well,
and I don't think, by the way, I also don't think the Seahawks players, I may be wrong on this, I don't think the Seahawks skill broke one tackle. I don't think they broke one tackle
So Brock, you're sitting here saying that there's a coaching and a scheme thing, but that doesn't sound like scheme and coaching breaking tackles. That's talent.
Right. That's talent.
So I mean, again, we can keep going through this and taking different sides, but it turns out they're all right.
Yes,
all three sides are not
all
doing
have
right
a
now.
Say. They've all got a say. If they're all presenting their case, they can write a case. There is a narrative to be told for all of them. There is no question about it. And what these next few weeks look like, Mike, what Sunday looks like at home for the first time in Pete's tenure, certainly Russell's tenure, they're going to hear things and hear a crowd they've never heard before, right? If San Francisco, one of the hottest teams in the league, who has found themselves, who does have talent to run the ball, who does have a Deebo Samuel and playmakers and a front four that will just engulf and envelop and humiliate you physically, right? If those things happen and that transpires and it's another five straight three and outs, what that stadium is going to feel and sound like Sunday will be unlike anything it's sounded like in 12 years. And they, those three camps, John, Pete, and Russ, they're the only ones that are going to fix it. So they're the only ones that are going to get it done and silence some of those boos if they don't play anywhere near their capabilities on Sunday.
All right, Brock, we got to finish up talking about the thing that's going on with the University of Washington. I can't tell. I mean, I don't know. I think just looking at either things are a complete mess and a disaster for Washington right now, or this Kalen DeBoer is a whole lot better, smarter, and just is going to like figure everything out. And the sheer power of his personality, will, and coaching ability is just going to carry this thing forward. But I don't know that there's much in between right now for Washington. I'm not wild about sort of everything associated with what they've done. And whether, you know, it starts with this idea. And I know that I get sort of like a little miffy about like how Huskies think that they're one thing. And I'm not sure that it's actually true. But when you're talking about going out right now and in this, you know, in this year trying to prove that you are a top job, I don't know whether signing the guy from Fresno State is the best way to prove that you are the kind of Howdy and I were kind of talking about, like, that's what Colorado does. Colorado gets Kalen DeBoer and you see whether or not he works out and then you hire him if he does. This isn't Chris Peterson, who for over a decade had success, beat the big wigs, showed that he was as good, if not better, than Power 5 coaches.
Everybody was coming after him.
That's
and
right.
He said no to everybody, but he said yes to you.
That's right. He had turned down jobs. This is an up-and-comer. He may work out. He may be a great coach. He may have all the right attributes. This is not in any way a shot at Kalen DeBoer, who may be a fantastic coach.
Yep.
But it is telling to me that that's who the next coach is, and not someone who's already shown it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perception reality. We talk about this. We talked about it last week when I jumped on with you in the morning and college football, and I've said that to you for 12 years, and it's even more so now. It is a perception reality sales business. The momentum has got to be moving forward within your program, and the perception and the reality of, you know, what is really going on and what it looks like it doesn't really matter.
Well, it doesn't look good.
The perception was Jimmy Lake was the absolute right guy at the absolute right time. If somebody's going to be handpicked by Chris Peterson, experience sat under the tutelage of Chris Peterson and everything else, he was supposed to be the guy. And my goodness gracious, some of the stories that I've heard that I had not even heard, Mike, about what was going on behind the scenes and the immaturity and the way he treated people. It was just, yeah, and it didn't come out till he was in that position. And then the staff he hired was a disaster. And, you know, it's super problematic. So the perception at that time with Jimmy Lake, I mean, that was, what, less 2 years ago? What was it? We were hip hooray. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, this is a home run. This is a guy that turned down other jobs. It's a guy that turned down other places. And when he stood and stayed because he wanted this job. And, yeah, it's maybe a little sooner than we all wanted for Chris Peterson. But, okay, like you couldn't be in a better spot. And then fast forward 13 games, you couldn't be in a worse spot. It was just a total misfire, did not work, misfit in that position. And now you have to make a coaching change in the midst of the most chaotic, turbulent, worst coaching market that you could do it. And oh, by the way, the prominent number one job on the West Coast, perception-wise, just hit a home run that I have called, that I've heard many say is the best hire in the history of the Pac-10 and Pac-12 in Lincoln Riley to USC.
He's that good, huh?
That is the perception. The perception is because of his success, because of his resume, because of what he did at Oklahoma, because of Heisman Trophy winner after Heisman Trophy winner after Heisman Trophy winner after first round pick after first pick after first pick at the most important position. And now you keep all of that talent in Southern California at quarterback and receiver there. Yeah. Yeah, the perception is this is the best coaching hire in the history of the conference.
Wow.
At a time where the conference desperately needs it.
Do you think
at
that could be true, too?
Do I think it could be true? Yeah, but personality-wise, they're going to be Norman, Oklahoma, and L.A. are worlds apart. And what he could do in Norman and how he could conduct business and how he could kind of shut the door on everybody and run the business the way he wanted to, you're going to have to open that door a little bit to boosters and alumni administration that all want their hands in it and, you know, just kind of work that process. But from a scheme and football standpoint, Mike, the track record couldn't be any better. And for a conference that has a TV deal coming up in a year and a half, 2 years, the timing couldn't be any better if he indeed has some of that reality to the perception of an incredible hire.
They have a TV deal now?
No, I'm just talking the Pac-12.
Right, I know. Like, does the Pac-12 have a TV deal? They're on TV?
Barely.
I wasn't aware necessarily of that.
Yes.
It was interesting. I did get to watch the Apple Cup. And first of all, it was fun. I know he didn't play.
It was
well.
Not fun. It was horrible.
I know it wasn't fun. It wasn't, you know, Sam didn't play. I was having fun rooting for Sam. It was fun watching him. I mean, I've heard you talk about him since he was a little kid now, essentially. And so it was fun for me to just watch Sam. He's a big eye black guy.
Big eye black
That's
guy.
A lot of eye black covering his
big
face.
Big William Wallace, Braveheart.
Is that
guy.
What it is?
I don't know.
William
no.
Wallace type
no,
of
I don't think it's a
situation.
Challenge. Yeah, I think it is. No, I think he's always been a big eye black guy.
Is he just the glare, like, bother him a lot when he's playing? He just has a lot of trouble with the sun and the lights and all of that?
It's kind of what the kids are doing these days. USC guy does the whole scar, like the one line.
Oh, I remember that. Believe me. Yeah, I'm
Jackson
aware of
Dart.
Him.
Yep.
Jackson
yep.
Dart. I love the name. What a great quarterback name. But yeah, obviously Sam didn't have his best day, and I don't know that it told me that he's not a good quarterback. Maybe he wasn't up for the challenge of overcoming all the obstacles that were placed in front of him on that day.
There were a few.
Yeah, it sure seemed that way. It's a tough spot, huh?
Yep. It was. It was brutal. Yeah. And, you know, guys were banged up and injured and you didn't have, you know, your best offensive player in Kate Otten. You haven't had him for a while. Guys missed time over the course of the week, right? You just play calling. What's it going to look like? How are we going to fit all this together? And I was proud that Sam didn't flinch. I didn't see a guy that took sacks, that ran out of bounds, that just threw it in the ground, checked down Charlie. I didn't see any of that. Obviously, you know, a couple of those and the one in the red zone in particular was the toughest. Because he felt like, okay, just made a great throw.
Right.
You could see he can push the ball down the field. You know, there are a couple drops, you know, into tight windows that would have sure helped too. But, okay, all that aside, here we go. We get down in the red zone, and that's the one that stung. That's where the inexperience rang so true. And, you know, that just at that point you knew the comeback was not going to be possible either.
How about
so it was hard.
Touchdown catch that kid made, though. Sheesh.
Yeah, Rome's pretty good.
That was a pretty good play.
Yeah, there's a reason that, you know, going back to the new head coach, there's a reason he looked at some of the pieces in play.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't, you know, this isn't baseball, Mike. This isn't the NFL, even college football now, you can turn it around in a season with an open free agency and everybody's bidding. Look at what Mel Tucker did from 2-5 at year one, Michigan State, to 10 wins. Look at what I got Utah State this week. 1-5, the team boycotted, hated the president, the comments he made about the interim coach. 1-5, total dumpster fire, absolute disaster. They win 9 games, playing for the Mountain West Championship this weekend. Who knows who's coming with Kalen? I think his quarterback is. I think Jake Haener's going to be coming, and I bet a receiver's coming, and I bet maybe some other receivers in the Mountain West are coming, or running backs, right? And that you can 10, 12, 15 guys, you can transform your roster season to season. So that is where it is so entirely different than any of those adages I shared with you over the last 12 or 13 years.
Understood. So let's talk a little bit about what you just said, that his quarterback may be coming. We were familiar. He was here, Jake Haener, right? And he left after they chose Jacob Eason. Now he's coming back in a transfer. What's the deal? Is this a good thing, or is this like, you know, the Pilgrims bringing smallpox?
Wow, I think this is one that has about 8 different angles to it. Like, if you're Jake Haener, right, you're going to go for your 6th year. He was at Washington way back in 2017, right? He already had transferred once. Does he want to go? He was invited to the Senior Bowl, right? He was invited as one of 6 guys to go to the Senior Bowl in a crazy QB class this year. That is seeing the top dogs fall off the cliff, and Kenny Pickett at Pitt's probably going to be the first one. But, you know, what does all of that look like? Does he want to come back to this place? And does he believe in the young personnel? He probably does. He looks at Jalen McMillan and Rome Odunze and some of those weapons and says, yeah, man. And, you know, we'll bring along a couple and got a good young O-line, and I can go rewrite my script and story at the University of Washington, right? Being the one cast off, and now I can be the one to turn it around from a 4-win team to an 8-9 win team. Who knows in college football today? So you could certainly, kind of like our last segment, you can certainly write a narrative in any different way. What will my nephew do? I don't know. You know, as he looks at that narrative, is there a narrative to write to say, man, this could be great for me to learn this system, right? Like Bryce Young did under Mac Jones at Alabama. And I can really learn the system and, you know, maybe get an opportunity with injury or not. And then just continue to grow and watch the young personnel grow. And then I'll get my turn. I don't know that's a path you can take. Or it is, hey, let me see how the dust settles all around the country. The people that loved me a year ago, where do they end up? I mean, it's bizarre world, Mike. It was hard for me to make decisions back in 1995. Hard. Where do I want to go? UCLA, Washington. It was hard. It was hard for me in 1997 to make a decision. Do I go to the league? Do I be the third pick in the draft behind Peyton and Leaf? Or do I try to come back to school after everyone left? Those are hard decisions. Looking compared to what they have to make today, nothing. Nothing. It's infinitely small compared to the day-to-day and just how much change comes around you at any time with the transfer portal. It's crazy, chaotic times. Unlike anything, and that's not hyperbole, unlike anything college football has ever, ever seen.
But is it fair to say that if Haener's coming to Washington, he's going to start, right? I mean, like, he's not going to transfer somewhere and then not play, right?
He would have every advantage with a system that he's been in for 2 years and knows like the back of his hand, with a head coach that's coming that would sure love to, you know, get off on the right foot. So, yes, he would have
top
every
10
opportunity
in college
to start.
Football in yards and touchdowns.
Correct.
All of college football last year.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yes. Is he handed that? And
I can't
just like,
believe they chose Jacob Eason over that. Yes. That's just amazing to me.
Yeah.
But the problem is, this feels like it would be so much of doing the same thing, choosing 1 year and potentially risking the future of a kid who's supposed to be, whether he's your nephew or not, Brock, one of the best quarterback prospects out there. It doesn't make
year
a lot of
year,
sense. I just don't get it.
It is a year to it's no. You have to change your optics. I do. It is a year-to-year proposition. And you go to the right place and you start for a year, Mac Jones, you can be a first-round pick. You're at the right place, you start for a year, Trey Lance, you can be the third pick in the draft. You get to the right situation where you light up the world for a year, right? Then all of a sudden, Jake Haener gets invited to the Senior Bowl.
I get it from Jake Haener's perspective. I don't get it necessarily from the Husky perspective.
Yeah.
Do you want him? Do you want Jake Haener if you're the Huskies? I don't think I do.
You better evaluate and say, this is a 1 year deal. And what is this one season going to bring me? Because if you learned anything after 13 games is all that the old guy coached, this thing can change in a hurry.
Well, I don't know. I get it. Obviously, it can change in a hurry. But I to me, if you believe in the coach that you have and you're trying to build something for the long term, immediately starting off with a transfer for 1 year over one of the top recruits in the country and all that. Yep. Just it just doesn't quite ring true or make a lot of sense to me. But we'll see where it goes. And as I said, if DeBoer knows what he's doing and he's got a plan and he pulls it all off, then all the credit in the world to him. Yep. And to Jen Cohen and to everybody else associated. So, well, Brock, thank you. Wow. This was fun today.
What a different time from July of 2009.
There's more to talk about than that day. We don't just have to read the headlines on ESPN. We can actually talk about things that we like. So, good stuff, man. Happy Thanksgiving. Looking forward. We'll do this again next week, and we'll be all ready to go. How did we get everything we needed out of you today?
Oh, absolutely.
Are you happy?
Definitely not you're happy at all.
Why not?
No, I have so much more to say.
Well, but what?
I'll save it for my dark web podcast. I got to save my ammunition for there. I can't give it all to you guys.
You're happy about Robbie Ray. You're happy about Frazier, right?
Oh, I'm stoked about the Mariners. Absolutely.
Are you more upset about, the Seahawks or the Huskies?
Oh, the Huskies. So much more upset about the Huskies.
Why?
We'll get there.
What do you mean?
We don't even have close to enough time for me to
unload. We will have a lot of time.
Give me 30 seconds.
This program has been run into the ground, and it starts with Chris Peterson.
Wow.
Whoa.
Well, we'll be talking about that next week. That sounds like ready to go. So you can find that on the Howdy Dark Web podcast, or you can stick around for the Brock and Salk podcast next week. We will be ready to talk to you guys then. Until then, the hey.
Is in a barn.
See everybody.